Welcome to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero that I'm interviewing today is Joshua Hanisch, co-founder with his wife, Danielle, of Blackberry Creek Farm Animal Sanctuary in Colfax, California. Welcome, Josh. I'm so glad you could be here.
Thanks for having me, Yolanda.
So you and Danielle are both educators, right? What is the link for you between education and animal welfare?
We started the sanctuary 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years ago this fall. And being in education, we immediately recognized that if you want any significant change in the world, you have to start with educating people. And we feel the most comfortable educating kids. We interact with adults all day as well. But we feel like we are specially equipped to grab attention of the younger generation and to show them what it means to live compassionately in our times. And that was one of the main missions of the sanctuary, was to educate the younger generation.
Mm-hmm. And what was the initial inspiration to actually start Blackberry Creek Sanctuary?
That was a
long
road.
Was that a rooster in the background just now?
Yes. We just got a couple new roos. They're acclimating. So, yeah, they're doing great. Yeah, for me, just the fact going vegan was about a seven-year journey, and it started with I went to UC Davis, and it was started with a leaflet on the egg industry. And at the time, I was a huge meat eater. I thought it was all propaganda, and I actually did research to make myself feel better and disprove this pamphlet. And the more I found out, the more I realized that I was wrong and that I had to really reexamine my values and what I put into my body. That led us to become vegetarian, and we were on vacation in Maui 6 years ago. And we went to Leilani Farm Sanctuary and got to meet Laura Lee, who is an amazing woman. And our short time there, we were only there for about 4 hours, kind of opened our eyes and said, wow, like, this is amazing. Like, having these animals here is so cool. We want to do more than just sending them a monthly check. And not that that's not appreciated. I mean, running a sanctuary, obviously, donors are the backbone and volunteers are the backbone of the sanctuary. We just felt that we had the time to dedicate more resources to opening our own sanctuary. So we came back to California and looked for about a year to find a piece of land, and we did, and we started with 6 animals, and we now have over 80.
Wow. I was actually going to ask you to get into some more of the logistics of it. So you started with the land. At what point did you file for 501c3 status, and what were the other major steps that you took?
Yeah, sure. So my wife and I fully funded the sanctuary. We did not have any founding donors or any outside support. I got my degree in finance, and we had luckily been wise with our money in our 20s and had enough to purchase the land. So that was quote-unquote easy. That was finding the land was pretty easy and straightforward. The nonprofit status, we really thought about that for a while as far as what type of a nonprofit we wanted to be filed under. We did not use any lawyers. We figured it out ourselves to save money. And we filed in November of 2014 and got our status in, I believe it was March or April of 2015. And that was huge. That was a great accomplishment. We had our board. We had our bylaws. We knew we wanted to be all volunteer. We're still all volunteer. We have no paid staff. The sanctuary leases the land from us for $1 a year. We really felt like we wanted all of the money that, or as much as possible, that people donate to the sanctuary to go directly towards the care of the animals. And that's something we're really proud of, because we know that there's always issues when, there's salaries to be had and people are making money. And, we don't want that to be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you are both still working.
That is correct. We both teach full time. Mm-hmm. I taught math for 7 years. I teach computer science now, and my wife teaches English. We're actually both at the same school, which is really unique and really great for us. because we have lunch meetings together and we, you know, tag team the to-do list as far as emails to get back to, and people are always calling about wanting to donate or surrender animals to us. And yeah, it's a balance. I mean, my day starts at about 5 o'clock, feed everybody in the morning. Depending on the situation of our individual animals, we have a group of volunteers that will come and check in on everybody during the day. But that's only if needed. Right now, luckily, knock on wood, everybody is healthy. And farm animals are very self-sufficient. But when we had our baby lambs, who were only 2 days old, we had round-the-clock volunteers that would come and bottle feed them. And that's what's been so amazing. I mean, when we started the sanctuary, I did not think about the connections that we would make with other people. I just thought about, wow, this is going to be great. We're going to be able to save so many animals and educate people, but it has been so overwhelming. Just the outpour of support, for our animals and for us. And it just, it keeps that fire going. It's so encouraging. And we would not be here without all of our volunteers.
That is so wonderful to hear. I'm glad you have all that support. So do you have like a pool of volunteers that you can always tap into? How many volunteers are there for a farm your size?
Yeah. I would say our active pool of volunteers is about 20, where we feel confident if there's ever an emergency, we have a pool of 20 people that we can call and say, hey, you know, what's your availability like? We need your help. We have about 6 that come on a regular basis that helps us clean stalls, and just love on the animals. We always encourage our volunteers, like, it should be like 30-40% work and the rest of the time should be hanging out with the animals. Like, this is all about the animals and connecting with them, not how much work can we get done. And what's really cool about our volunteers is that most of them are past students of ours. And
wow.
I would say about of that core group of 20, I would say 9 to 11 are past students who are now juniors and seniors in high school. And we actually have some freshmen and sophomores that come out too.
So you're getting the young people involved, which actually segues into my next question. You have a new program called Keepers. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Being in education, we are always in the world of trying to get into college. And whether that's making yourself stand out as far as volunteer service or trying to pay for it and looking at scholarships. And we definitely attract students who want volunteer hours to have their application stand out from others. But FFA and 4-H has always been just an interesting problem to try to solve. And we are right smack dab middle in 4-H and FFA country here where we're at in Northern California. And I mean, to be completely honest, I love what they try to teach young people. I just don't like how they do it. And
I'm sorry, 4-H is what again? And FFA is Future Farmers of America. But what does 4-H stand for? I'm vaguely familiar with both of them, but maybe if you could just define them both.
That's actually a great question. You're putting me on the spot. I don't know what 4-H. I don't know what all the H's stand for. I do know that FFA is actually part of our federal education policy, and it is partly funded by the government. And which is very shocking when I first found that out. I knew we were taking on a behemoth, but then when I realized, oh my gosh, like the government is behind funding this program, it put a whole new light on the problem.
Wow. Okay.
So, and I just want to elaborate, like, I don't want people to think that I like FFA at all or 4-H. I do think that especially our current generation, they need to know what it means to have a strong work ethic, what it means to have just experience in the real world, solving real problems. And FFA and 4-H try to give those experiences to these kids. They just do it in a horribly cruel way, which is a lot of kids raise animals for slaughter. And they take them from a baby, and then depending on the animal, up to 6 months to a year, and then slaughter them. And people always ask me, why do they slaughter them at the end? And it's economics. It's money. It's that's how they are able to pay back the school for all the supplies, because a lot of students don't have the money up front to purchase all the equipment and all the medicine and all the food necessary to raise an animal. So the school fronts them the money, and they have to pay the school back at the end. And a lot of families don't have $400, $600, $1,000 per year to give to the school and not slaughter the animal. As students age, they get bigger and bigger animals, which means they actually make a lot more money, and then they use that money to go to college. So we knew right off the bat that we couldn't just, you know, offer this program and say, hey, come volunteer with us. Like, you don't get anything in return. And it's sad to say that that's how, you know, our society operates, but that's how our society operates. I mean, we do have people that come and volunteer out of the goodness of their heart, but you could attract so many more people if there was something in it for them. So we thought about it, and we decided to come up with this program called Keepers, and it's a very long acronym, and if people want to check it out, it's on our website. And involvement in the program gets you a scholarship every year, and it's a $1,000 scholarship. So we're open. We accept applications from freshmen in high school to seniors in college. So potentially, if you did it every single year, that's $8,000 over the course of high school and college career.
Wow. And so basically, instead of raising an animal for slaughter, then what are they doing instead of that?
Yeah. So they are learning about the animals we have here. We are not taking, I mean, unless there is a need to take in a baby animal because mom died or there's an abusive situation, but we are not purchasing baby animals. They are getting to know the animals that are here on the sanctuary grounds. And we have a great relationship with our vet, and she is very open about coming and giving free clinics to kids about how to, wrap a wound, or how to, like, clean out the pig's ears, or lots of things. I mean, there's 100 different things that she talks about. And it gives the kids that same hands-on experience that they would get in FFA or 4-H without having to slaughter the animal at the end. And Sebastian, our pig, who we rescued this summer, he pretty much kicked off the whole program. I made a short film, it's about 15 minutes long, about our journey with him. Daniel and I went down to Orange County in the middle of July to their fair and captured the days that he was at the fair and bringing him home to sanctuary and having his quote-unquote mom, who is a Dory. She's an amazing young girl that is in high school down in Orange County. She came up with her family to see Sebastian at Blackberry Creek. And it is really touching, and it's a beautiful story. And the other thing that we're doing with our students is teaching them how to be effective advocates. And we're using the platform of animal rights, but there's obviously lots of other causes that are important and touch the hearts of different people. We are also striving through Keepers to teach them how to effectively advocate for the cause that they believe in. So we're going to be taking our kids around and leafleting, obviously peacefully, trying to put a positive face, a compassionate face to the animal rights movement. So that's Keepers.
That sounds really, really wonderful. I've heard so many stories about kids in FFA getting their hearts broken because they raised these calves, and now these grown cows are actually, they see them as sentient beings with personalities and faces and little quirks, and they don't want to send them to slaughter, but they have to at the end of their program. And so this is a great alternative.
You're absolutely right. I knew that going into the Orange County Fair, but seeing it in person, it absolutely shocked me and saddened me. And we captured on the video this one girl who was a friend of a Dory. And at the end of the video, I mean, you see her saying that, you know, if she knew she could have surrendered her pig to a sanctuary, she would have, but it was too late. And it makes me just so much more passionate about saving kids and obviously animals from having to experience that. I mean, what a horrible experience to carry with you throughout your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're showing these kids just a different perspective on the whole thing and making them maybe question everything that they learned as they were growing up, right? Because that's their paradigm if they're farmers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many of the kids when we were down there were like, wait, what's a farm animal sanctuary? Like, you don't kill your animals? Like, what do you do with them? And like, we don't do anything. Like, what do you do with your dog? What do you do with your cat? Like, how are they any different? And mm-hmm. A couple kids, like, I could just see that light bulb like, oh yeah, like they're animals too. And pigs are actually smarter than those, and we are treating them so horribly. And talking to them about vegan food and just how amazingly delicious it is and nutritious and healthy just for a long life. So, yeah, that is something that we're looking to expand with keepers.
Amazing. So what would you say is the most rewarding part of your work with the sanctuary?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say the most rewarding thing is seeing people come here and have their hearts changed. And it's also a humbling experience because, I don't know, there's maybe been two or three people in my lifetime that I have actually convinced to be vegan. And that might even be generous. It might just be one or two. But I mean, there was a lady that came to the sanctuary and she was giving all of our pigs belly rubs. And she was petting their ears. She just started crying. And I thought something had happened. I'm like, are you okay? And she's just like, I can't believe that I used to feed my dogs pig ears. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whoa, like, I never thought about that. And Danielle and I didn't do anything. None of our volunteers did anything. It was just her interaction with the pigs and seeing them for who they really are. And that's so encouraging. It makes me so excited. Like, we need to get busloads of people up here just to experience these animals, because if we just give them the time to experience how awesome these animals are, so many more people would feel the same way.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. That helped change me as well, because I was always pretty sensitive to animals and animal welfare and was veg and vegan for years when I was in college and after, but then I kind of, I don't know, I fell off the wagon and I stopped caring as much. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but a visit out to a farm sanctuary here, and it just made me realize what my priorities really are again. And it put a face and a personality to these beautiful creatures.
Oh, absolutely. And for anyone who is plant-based, vegan, you know, whatever you want to call it, and that's listening right now, go visit a farm sanctuary. I mean, if you're... I never think twice about what I eat because I'm always around the animals, and I always have this constant reminder. I mean, not that I don't really need the reminder, but I never question my diet, my values, because I'm always around the animals. And I just think that it's important for plant-based individuals to kind of recharge their ethics and their compassion and their feelings by going out and reestablishing that connection with animals at a farm animal sanctuary.
Absolutely. That's part of why I'm doing this. So is there any piece of advice you'd like to give someone before they set out to do their own rescue and sanctuary?
Yes. Look into zoning. Mm-hmm. We luckily haven't had any issues with that because we did our homework. We've had a little bit of issues with neighbors. We have a little over 5 acres, and our neighbors are pretty far from us, but we share a common road, a bunch of different properties, and we had one neighbor just be a little unreasonable about how much traffic is coming down the road for when we have events. And I would just say that when you are looking for land, just be upfront with everybody involved, because you don't want to get into a situation where you purchase the land, people don't really understand what it is you're doing, you start doing it, and then they start causing problems, whether it real like legal problems that they actually have ground, legal ground to stand on to shut you down, or if they're just a nuisance. And then the other thing is just remember it's a 24-hour commitment, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily this year, because we've had more volunteers step up, Daniel and I have actually had a little bit more time to get away for a weekend here or a Friday night there. But I mean, we, for the first 3 years, not only were we funding the sanctuary because there wasn't enough donations to cover the costs, but we were here all the time doing the work.
Mm-hmm. You have to really love it.
Yeah. It can't just be one of those things where you're just like, I love farm animals. Like, I just want to hang out with them. Like, I mean, and I don't know if I should talk about this much just because it's so sad, but running a farm animal sanctuary is also really sad because you deal with a lot of sick animals. And I mean, we have chickens from the battery cage industry, and they are so unhealthy, and we do everything we can to give them the best quality of life possible and to make sure that they live as long as possible. And, you know, they're just so mistreated in the industry that they don't have the longest lifespan. And, you know, we rescued some goats 2 years ago, and we had three goats here, and only one survived. One passed away within the first 36 hours, and one passed away a month later at UC Davis because he was septic, and they just could not get the infections under control. And those times really shake you. Justin, it's like, man, like, I have lost all, and I don't feel like this now, but in those times, it's like, I've lost all faith in humanity. Like, how can we treat these animals like that? And it's so true that when you run a farm animal sanctuary, like, you need to be very cognizant about self-care. And that is something that Daniel and I have really tried to put a premium on. Like, we have a room in our house that is, like, animal free. I mean, we have two dogs that live with us in the house, and we have chickens and ducks and turkeys and even the lambs when they were little, like, living with us inside the house, not necessarily like in the living quarters, but we have different rooms for different needs. But just having that space where it's like, okay, like, I'm just going to take an hour, and like, I'm not going to think about the sanctuary, and I'm just going to, you know, watch my favorite show or listen to music or something like that.
Like a sanctuary.
Yeah. And yeah, that's funny you said that. I mean, I definitely feel like this is as much of a sanctuary for Danielle and I as it is for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
So many days I get home from work and, you know, like everybody, tired, sometimes frustrated. And you come here and it's like, there's Poe, like, sitting in his stall, like, there to love you. Like, he gives you kisses when you come in. And Poe is our disabled pig. He's 600 pounds, and he is by far everyone's favorite. And it just, I don't know. I tell Danielle, like, it filters the world out of me. Like, it filters all of the negativity out of me when I can just hang out with the animals.
That sounds so wonderful. Yeah, actually, I was going to ask you what keeps you inspired when things get difficult, and I think you answered it by talking about the sanctuary inside your house and how you just need some space and time sometimes to get away from it all. In terms of animals.
I do have something to add for that, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's really important for anyone thinking to start a sanctuary. My most favorite time when I feel really recharged is actually when I write thank you notes to all of our donors. We write hand thank you notes to everyone that donates, and it is a timely process, but we feel like it is extra important and kind of selfish in a way. It just makes me full of gratitude. When I'm done, it's like, wow, like, I just wrote 20 thank you notes. Like, these, like, I don't even know half these people, and they just donated, you know, their money to us because they trust us that we're taking care of the animals. Like, that also really fills up my tank.
That sounds wonderful. Gratitude and focusing on the good people too, the good that people can do, right?
Yes.
My last question is, in terms of animal welfare, what is giving you the most hope right now, like, in the world?
what's giving me the most hope is the progress we're making with plant-based foods. It's really leaving people with no excuse. And that, I feel like, is where we're going to get the most change to occur, by just changing people's diets. And, okay, you know, people might not care about their health. Like, that is their prerogative, I guess. But if they want to eat unhealthily, or, if, you know, they want, you know, that sensation of eating meat or cheese, like, at least we have, which is, these alternatives are more healthy, usually, than the non-plant-based ones. But that's where it's really going to change, is getting people to demand plant-based alternatives to an unsustainable industry. It's even non-vegan.
And I was just going to say, and those alternatives keep getting better and better. I mean, some of the cheeses out there are pretty amazing.
Yes, and the Impossible Burger. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. like, it's weird eating it, because, you know, I haven't had meat in 4 or 5 years, and it's weird eating it. And I have a poker night at my house probably once a quarter for a couple of my coworkers, and I obviously always cook vegan. And at first they were rolling their eyes, like, all right, Josh, like, we'll come over, but, like, we're not going to eat any of your food. And I made them Beyond Burgers with the chow cheese and the Amy's vegan chili. And a couple of them were like, I thought you said you were going to cook vegan. Like, I did.
Wow.
Like, this is vegan. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, agreed. It's great for the environment, too, and water consumption, environment, everything.
Absolutely.
Josh Hanisch, thank you so much for your time. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at blackberrycreek.org. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to talking with all of you again soon. Bye-bye.